the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Some specialists indicate that there may be a fall-off of as much as 80% in the number of American infants born with Down syndrome. An 80% reduction in the number of babies born with Down syndrome. Is that good news or bad news? Well, when you understand that that means that 80% of babies that are being diagnosed with Down syndrome are being aborted in the womb, you'll understand that is really bad news. It tells us a great deal about our understanding of humanity, our devaluation of human life, and very frankly, our depreciation of those who are born with Down syndrome and the gifts they are to humanity. We'll be back for an interesting conversation, and we're going to have some folks here in the studio who are in a unique position to talk about this, and we'll be back with that in the second segment. First, a review of issues in the news. Floridians and Mexicans in the Yucatan Peninsula are preparing right now for a devastating storm. Hurricane Wilma had grown into a hurricane of a Category 5 status with sustained winds of 175 miles an hour, and it grew that way just from a tropical storm in a matter of about 72 hours, at one point becoming the strongest hurricane ever recorded for so long as such things have been recorded. The forecast still contains a lot of uncertainty. If it makes a sharp turn, it may miss Florida and hit Cuba. If it follows what the computers indicate to be the most likely trajectory, it will hit the southern peninsula of Florida, hitting on the Gulf Coast and continuing across, passing into the Atlantic after crossing the peninsula. It may be a Category 2 or 3 storm when it strikes land, and that may be as many as 5 to 6 days out. You know, we should be thankful that we have this kind of weather tracking and forecasting ability, because previous generations simply had to look out the window and see what happened. And right now there are people fleeing from Sarasota and other cities on Florida's west coast, and for good reason. And while we're bemoaning and very much concerned about the tragedy that could unfold, let's remember it could always be a lot worse, and ignorance is not bliss. And so right now the most important thing for a lot of Americans to do is to exercise caution and take care of their families. And folks, just remember, your family is worth a whole lot more than your home. And your material possessions can be replaced, but not your loved ones. And so judge accordingly. In Pakistan, the news is worse than even expected. The death toll from the earthquake that happened in the Kashmir area on the Pakistani-Indian border is now reaching 80,000 deaths. And you're talking about 80,000 that have thus far been documented, and that figure may continue to rise. It looks like 37,958 people have died just in the Northwest Frontier Province, and it's estimated that in Pakistani-held Kashmir, another 40,000 people have died. India has reported 1,360 deaths in the part of Kashmir that it controls. Let's just remember the toll from natural disasters over the past several months, beginning with the tsunami that hit the Indian Ocean Basin just about Christmas time last year. It killed, they now believe, about 176,000 people. And this compares also with what we have in terms of the devastation of two Category 5 hurricanes that have hit the United States and devastation elsewhere. And, of course, right now, this earthquake in the Pakistani-Indian border area. It's a reminder to us that there are people who are suffering tremendously, families who have been devastated, cities that have been wiped out. And right now in this area of Kashmir, perhaps the greatest, greatest grief is coming from people who simply do not know where their loved ones are. This is an opportunity for Christian compassion, and it should also be a part of the conforming of the Christian heart to the mind of Christ, to recognize that this is not just about something that happens to somebody somewhere. Because of the great commandment in which we understand our first responsibility is to love the Lord our God with all our heart and soul and mind, and then to love our neighbor as ourself, we understand that this is our story too. Folks, do you realize that this generation of young Americans is being doped up at an unprecedented rate? I was fascinated by a story that appeared in yesterday's edition of the New York Times. Reporter Gardner Harris tells us that the use of sleeping pills is now soaring among children and American teenagers. I'm quoting from a story. He said the use of sleeping pills among children and very young adults rose 85% from the year 2000 to 2004. And yet another sign that parents and doctors are increasingly turning to prescription medications to solve childhood health and behavioral problems, end quote. Folks, that's 4 years. An 85% increase in prescriptions of sleeping pills to American kids and teenagers in just 4 years. We are becoming a medicalized, pharmaceutical-dependent culture. And it's one thing for this to affect adults, but what does it say about us that we are now medicalizing childhood as a problem? The behavioral issues of childhood are now increasingly seen as something to be medicated. America uses over 90% of all of the Ritalin that is made and distributed in the world. Do we have 90% of the hyperactive kids? In some ways, we're simply making boyhood an illness. Now, no doubt there are some people who may be helped by such drugs. There are some situations that I would not even claim to begin to understand, but this just can't be right. This kind of over-medicalization is one symptom of the fact that we do not understand behavior in biblical terms. We do not see the responsibility of parents in terms of the discipline and training and nurture of children, as I believe we ought, but rather we're seeing doctors as the answer to behavioral problems. And folks, the real kicker in this story in yesterday's edition of the New York Times is that the approximately 15% of people under age 20 who received sleeping pills, well, there's a lot going on there too. About a large number of them are taking the sleeping pills because they can't sleep because of the other drugs they're taking for behavioral problems. That's right. The drugs that have been prescribed in order to solve behavioral problems are now understood and being blamed for preventing sleep. So what do? You don't pull them off the other drugs. You simply add sleeping pills. What does it say when you've got young children that are taking sleeping pills just in order to get through the night? In her book, Home Alone America, Mary Eberstadt documents the impact of the medicalization of childhood behaviors. She says this: yes, some children do have terrible mental problems, and some doctors and families find such drugs to be lifesavers. But even pro-medication experts believe that prescriptions have gone way too far. I think so. Folks, there is shifting ground on the abortion issue. That's going to be the main topic of our conversation, as it has to do with the kind of prenatal diagnosis that is now available and the choices people are making on questions like Down syndrome. But I want to point to a shift in the culture that is represented by this week's editions of the Washington Post. That is the major newspaper in our nation's capital, and the Washington Post is predictably and uncompromisingly pro-abortion. And yet this week there have appeared in that paper two articles that indicate that maybe at least this newspaper is open to reconsidering the issue. One of them we'll discuss in the second segment, but right now I want to draw your attention to Richard Cohen's column that was published in today's edition of the Washington Post. Richard Cohen is one of the liberal commentators in that newspaper, and yet what he has to say today in this column really deserves our attention. In his column, he suggests that Americans should support choice, but not Roe v. Wade. That's an interesting title in and of itself, but listen to what he says within the article. He explains that at one point many years ago, he was approached by a friend whose girlfriend was pregnant, and this friend wanted Cohen to help arrange an abortion. He said that he helped by arranging this abortion in Germany. I'm reading from his column. He said, "With little thought, I did so. She went home to Germany, and I never saw her again. But that was then, and this is now." He says, "I would do things a bit differently now. I would give the matter much more thought. I no longer see abortion as directly related to sexual freedom or feminism, and I no longer see it as strictly a matter of personal privacy either. It entails questions about life, maybe more so at the end of the process than at the beginning, but life nonetheless." I'm reading from his column. He says, "This is not a fashionable view in some circles, but it is one that usually gets grudging acceptance when I mention it. I know of no one who has flipped on the abortion issue, but I do know of plenty of people who no longer think of it as a minor procedure that only prudes and right-wingers oppose. The anti-abortion movement has made headway. That shift in sentiment is not apparent in polls because they do not measure doubt, only position, for or against. But between one and the other, black or white, is a vast area of gray where up or down, yes or no, fades to questions about circumstance, why, what month, etc. Whatever the case, the very basis of the Roe v. Wade decision, the one that grounds abortion rights in the Constitution, strikes many people now as faintly ridiculous. Whatever abortion may be, it cannot simply be a matter of privacy." End quote. Those statements from Richard Cohen's column in today's edition of the Washington Post. And you know, when a major columnist of Richard Cohen's reputation begins to rethink the question of abortion, something's going on. He hasn't come where we are. He's not, at this point, even an opponent of abortion. He's not calling for abortion to be criminalized. But he is saying, look, the logic of Roe v. Wade no longer holds, and it's high time we admit it. Abortion simply can't be a matter of nothing more than sex and privacy. There is an issue of life here. Mr. Cohen admits he doesn't even know how to factor that in at the beginning or at the end, but he says he can't get it off of his mind. And looking at the abortion issue now, he's had to transform the equation in his mind. Well, my hope is he's going to take it several steps further. But it's a sign of some hope that even in the Washington Post, this kind of discussion has started. And we're going to pick up where that discussion leaves off in the second segment, looking at the issue of Down syndrome and abortion. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Sometimes, like lightning across a darkening sky, one event, one article, one column, one news story all of a sudden illuminates. And that certainly is the case with a story that appeared in Tuesday's edition of the Washington Post just this week. The article is written by Patricia E. Bauer, and she is a former reporter and bureau chief for the Washington Post. And she warns that prenatal testing techniques have shifted the medical equation from an ability to abort babies judged to be defective to a duty to abort. Well, she's right, of course, and the shift in this logic is inevitable. Once human dignity is redefined in terms of acceptable and unacceptable babies, it's only a short jump to the argument that no one should be allowed to impose a defective baby on the society. In Tuesday's edition of the Post, Patricia Bauer tells of her own daughter, Margaret, who was born with Down syndrome. She said this, "Whenever I am out with Margaret, I'm conscious that she represents a group whose ranks are shrinking because of the wide availability of prenatal testing and abortion. I don't know how many pregnancies are terminated because of prenatal diagnoses of Down syndrome, but some studies estimate 80 to 90%. Imagine. As Margaret bounces through life, especially out there in the land of the perfect body, I see the way people look at her, curious, surprised, sometimes wary, occasionally disapproving or alarmed. I know that most women of childbearing age that we may encounter have judged her and her cohort and have found their lives to be not worth living. To them, Margaret falls into the category of avoidable human suffering. At best, a tragic mistake. At worst, a living embodiment of the pro-life movement. Less than human. A drain on society. That someone I love is regarded this way is unspeakably painful to me." She went on and said, "In ancient Greece, babies with disabilities were left out in the elements to die. We in America rely on prenatal genetic testing to make our selections in private, but the effect on society is the same. Margaret's old pediatrician tells me that years ago he used to have a steady stream of patients with Down syndrome. Not anymore. Where did they go, I wonder? On the west side of L.A., that's Los Angeles, they aren't being born anymore," he says. She goes on and says, "I have to think that there are many pro-choicers who, while paying obeisance to the rights of people with disabilities, want at the same time to preserve their right to ensure that no one with disabilities will be born into their own families. The abortion debate is not just about a woman's right to choose whether to have a baby. It's also about a woman's right to choose which baby she wants to have." Now, Bauer's article is truly chilling, and I promise you, it's a sign of things to come. The duty-to-die argument is gaining momentum along with the argument that only those babies judged to be acceptable should be allowed to live. Earlier just this same year, George Neumeyer reported that each year in America, fewer and fewer disabled infants are born. The reason is eugenic abortion. Doctors and their patients use prenatal technology to screen unborn children for disabilities. Then they use that information to abort a high percentage of them. Columnist George F. Will is the father of John Will, who is an ardent baseball fan, also born with Down syndrome. George Will writes, "In Britain, more babies with Down syndrome are aborted than are allowed to be born. In America, more than 80% of the babies diagnosed prenatally with Down syndrome are aborted." We're looking now at between 80 and 90% minimally of all babies which are prenatally diagnosed to have Down syndrome being aborted. Folks, this isn't looking down the slippery slope. This is what you see at the bottom of the slippery slope. Where from here? Those with Down syndrome now? What's next? A duty to abort. That's what Patricia Bauer is arguing is coming about, that people actually look at her and say, why would you allow this child to be born? Why would you wish to welcome this into your family, this person. Folks, I'm getting ready to go to Washington, D.C. in a couple of weeks. I'm going to present a lecture on beauty. And one of the three principles I'm going to talk about in terms of the revolutionary Christian understanding of beauty is that it is the Christian worldview that explains why the smiling face of a child with Down syndrome is more beautiful than the actress or the model on the front of Playboy magazine. The Christian worldview understands what true beauty is all about and the true dignity of human life and understands that joyous face of a child or an adult with Down syndrome to be genuinely beautiful. With me in the studio today are two very special guests, and they have experience and expertise to talk about this that even I do not have and would not claim to have, and I'm thankful that they are here to share their stories. Dave Hare is a seminary student here at Southern Seminary from Southern California. He grew up there with his sister Heather, who also has Down syndrome, and he's going to talk about what he learned about life and about Christianity from observing his sister. With us here in the studio also is Gary Gupton, who is minister of adults at Highview Baptist Church here in Louisville. He and his wife, Terry, are the parents of Grant, a 16-year-old boy with Down syndrome. And I know Grant. Mm-hmm. And every time I see him, Gary, he's got a big smile on his face.
He is alive.
And, you know, he is the only person
all around him.
Excuse me. He's the only person I know who at church is always going to give me a hug.
Yeah, that number probably swells every day, too. He is a hugging kid, one of the most loving and most appreciative kids, Dr. Moeller, I've ever seen. At Christmas time, you could wrap up a box of rocks, and he is just excited to get it. He is so thankful for every day of life, as are we.
Well, I really appreciate Gary, you and Dave coming in. And Dave, your sister Heather is now 27.
She is. She's actually living in Colorado right now with my parents, but she just graduated from college and she got an associate's degree, and she's one of the happiest people you will ever meet in your entire life.
Now, how do you guys respond to this story? I mean, the statistics, I know from conversations with you already, they're not shocking you. I mean, you were aware of the fact that most babies with Down syndrome are now being aborted?
I wasn't aware of the number of it, Dr. Moeller. I guess the backside of what concerns me about it is, does my son then become marginal a few years down the line? Does someone make the determination that Grant, since he only has what they would consider a minimal positive impact on society, does somebody then say, well, natural resources are more valuable than human resources, and now someone wouldn't value and give him the right to live after he's already been born?
Well, you know, Gary, we've been talking on this program even in recent days about Peter Singer, a professor of bioethics at Princeton University. He makes the very case you just laid out. Mm-hmm. I think most people would be shocked to know that he's not arguing so much that there are natural resources that are more important than human beings. He's saying that being human is nothing special. That there are animals that may have greater intellectual capacity and a relational communication capacity than some human beings, and thus they should be afforded and accorded a greater right to life. You know, I'm hoping that this shocks some people into an awareness of what we really face. Dave, what was it like growing up as the brother of an older sister who had Down syndrome?
Well, a lot of it was defending my sister, to be honest, with just the people who, like you said, just give them scorns and looks that they don't deserve. But a lot of it was also, I learned so much about just how to be content and how to be happy, and even at times how to be bold for the gospel in ways that I had never been in my life before. Heather is someone who would, we went to on a missions trip to Jamaica, walk up to a large Rastafarian man that I would have never come close to and shared the gospel with him for 20 minutes. And she's just one of those people who comes up to you and gives you a hug in church and can tell you the gospel at the same time. She's a wonderful human being.
Was there any moment where you would honestly say you weren't certain of the fact that either Heather or Grant really was as fully human as any of the rest of us?
Not for an instant.
Absolutely not.
Now, you see, I think one of the problems here is that there are people who have a vision of humanity that is rooted in some kind of genetic perfection. And they have a list. They say, well, someone would have to be this or that. And, you know, we're talking about Down syndrome today, but the same kind of logic could be extended to someone who, for instance, suffers through an accident, not a genetic problem, but would have an accident and be incapacitated, and the same kind of arguments would be made. Folks, I want to know what you think about this. What would you say to the fact that 90% roughly of all babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are being aborted? What would you say to someone who is considering such a thing? And folks, what about this test? Would you even allow the test to be done? Because as a Christian, what would you do with the information you would receive? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to Coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, I think if most Americans just saw the bare statistic that roughly 80 to 90% let's put it this way, that there's been an 80 to 90% reduction in the number of babies born with Down syndrome, I think they would see that as good news. Maybe there's some kind of cure, some kind of treatment. But, folks, that's not it. What's happening is that through prenatal genetic testing, these babies are being identified before they are born, and they're being aborted. And the logic, as Patricia Bauer argues in the Washington Post this week, is that the whole equation is now shifted to where there are doctors who say to parents, well, why would you allow this child to be born? And what would justify your decision to burden society with a child who would suffer from either Down syndrome or some other kind of genetically identifiable disease? Gary and Terry Gupton are the parents of Grant, age 16. You know, Gary, when Grant was born, what was really presented to you?
Well, we had no idea there was going to be anything, quote-unquote, wrong with Grant when he was born. Terry had an absolutely textbook pregnancy. Grant was delivered. About 6 hours later, a doctor we had never met walked into the room and said, Mr. and Mrs. Gupton, your child has Down syndrome, and walked out. And we just felt a vacuum in the room. And the best way I can describe it, Dr. Mueller, is I remember seeing the scenes of the Murrah building in Oklahoma City when it was bombed, and there were office buildings just hanging out. And that's how my wife and I felt. We felt like we were hanging on with nothing around us, no support. We felt so isolated. And the pediatrician, our pediatrician, came to us, and he said, we recommend that you institutionalize Grant. And the first thing we did was got a new pediatrician, because we weren't going to go that way.
Well, God bless you. And, you know, I think one of the most important things that we can affirm and learn out of all of this is that children who are welcomed into families, they just blossom and they become a natural part of it. Dave Hare is the brother of Heather, now living in Colorado. She, with Down syndrome, now age 27, has graduated from college with an associate's degree. You know, Dave, there are a lot of people who would say, that's just nonsense. How does something like that happen?
Well, you have to realize that these people aren't people that need to be fixed. They're not people who are defective. These are human beings who don't need Ritalin and they don't need sleeping pills because they live their lives and they live their lives happy and they can portray the compassion of Christ in a way that I can't, and they can share the gospel in a way that I can't. They're human beings that change the world, and you don't even know it if you've never met one.
Now, tell me what it was like to grow up. I mean, did you have talks? You said you had to grow up fighting for it, and on the playground, in the schoolyard. What kind of issues confronted you as a young boy about your own sister?
Well, sure, I knew that she was different growing up, but she didn't know that. I mean, the only times that she knew it is when these people were making fun of her, but she just was one of those kids that was excited to go to school and was excited to learn and was excited to have friends and was excited about Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. Those were the things that made her happy, and those are the things that excited her in life. And growing up with her, I was able to just learn. I just learned so much. I can't say that enough. She really was a blessing.
Now, I want to ask both of you, did you find that people, when you're out in the shopping mall or out for a sporting event or something, do you find that people naturally kind of shrink back from an individual Down syndrome?
It's interesting for Grant. I've been in the public eye for most of Grant's life with some of the work I do in television, and I would often put Grant on television with me. So Grant is a pseudo-celebrity here in Louisville. A lot of folks know who he is because we don't want to hide Grant. You know, he's nothing to be ashamed of, and so Grant hasn't experienced that quite as much when they're around us because folks tend to recognize us. But in the for example, in the school system, my wife Terry has to really be an advocate for him to make sure that he gets the kind of education and the kind of opportunities that other kids take for granted. And one thing about Grant, he knows a lot of things, but one thing he does not know he has Down syndrome. We've never discussed it with him. There You know, my other two kids, they obviously know that Grant has challenges, but we have never lowered the bar for Grant. We expect him to behave and achieve just like we do the other two kids. So we haven't put this label on Grant because we don't feel like it fits. It really will not impact his life at all as far as we're concerned from how we handle him as parents.
Well, you know, Gary, I just want to tell our listening audience that you were a very popular and much respected sportscaster here in the city. That's what gave you the opportunity to kind of introduce Grant to others before you went into the ministry and became a minister of adults at Highview Baptist Church. But I want to say, as a fellow church member, I just learned a lot about being a dad by watching you with Grant.
Well,
and
I appreciate
that. It's just really sweet. And, you know, Grant adds so much to our church. I'm thankful that we get to see Grant on Sundays and be reminded that God's glory is in him as well. Folks, I want you to join the conversation. We have some wonderful callers on the line right after this break. We're going to get to your calls. I want to know what you think. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Folks, I mentioned that when I go to Washington, I'm going to give a lecture on beauty, and I'm going to talk about one of my points, which is that only the Christian faith explains why the face of a child with Down syndrome was more beautiful than the model on the front of the Glamour magazine. It's because beauty isn't just about the way we look. It's about what we see. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, right now, if you're carrying a baby, if you are pregnant, or if your wife is pregnant, you can expect to get a series of questions at the office of your local OBGYN. And one of them is whether you want all these tests. And the question is, what are you going to do when you get the information? Would you abort a child that doesn't measure up to some kind of external expectation? Let's go to Mike calling from Seville, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Mike, what do you think of all this?
Dr. Mohler, my wife and I had a child just about a year ago, but she was a high-risk pregnancy. And at the 20-week ultrasound test, we were notified that the child was showing markers for Downs. One of those is a nuchal fold thickness, which is the thickness of the skin on the back of the neck. And they were pretty upset about the fact that, you know, and just drawn and just felt like, oh, you know, this is a very terrible thing. And they approached us about doing what they call the triple check test, which is a lot of further testing and to identify certain things. But at that particular point in time, we really made the choice to say, you know what, regardless of how this child turns out, we're going to love this child, and we're going to bring him into the world. Because by golly, I tell you what are you going to do, abort him at 20 weeks? I think that would be even more traumatic than seeing this child born and experiencing that joy after almost 8 years of infertility for us.
You know, Mike, I really appreciate your call. And, you know, I would have to just push it back and say whether it at 20 weeks or 20 seconds, once you had this information, it would just be evil to abort that baby. And it is just frightening to me that I live in a civilization, we together live in a culture, in which upwards of 90% of babies diagnosed with this are now being aborted. That's just Down syndrome, not to mention other things. I'm so sorry we lost a caller. Barb was calling to speak about her child with cerebral palsy, just to talk about what joy this child had brought into their lives as a family. And, you know, that's just precious. And, you know, it's not only the burden that supposedly the world thinks you now have received. What about the blessing? That's how we have to transform the equation. Let's go to Heather calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Heather, you're up.
Hello. I just wanted to call and say that, you know, they have offered me those tests, and I said no both times. I have two children, and they're wonderful, but I would have wanted the children regardless. And also, I have had the opportunity to work with disabled children and adults, and they are just a true blessing to be around.
Well, Heather, that's a sweet testimony. And, you know, you're the second caller in a row to say that these tests are a problem. In the first case, we had Mike saying that the test suggested a genetic problem that turned out not to be present, and of course everyone would have understood basically within many medical contexts if he and his wife had said, let's just abort the baby and start all over again. In fact, there may have been those who would say that was a superior moral test. Why? Because their morality is based upon, well, no affirmation of human dignity, just the equation that we have a duty only to bring in the right children. And that's an old argument with murderous implications. And then we also have from Heather here just a personal word saying she declined the test. My wife and I did decline the test. Of course, it was years ago when they weren't quite as extensive as they are now. But even back then, I mean, amniocentesis, why? We wouldn't, if there was an opportunity to intervene within the womb in order to save the child, in order that it might be born, well, there could be justification for that, of course, but not when it comes down to aborting the baby. Dave?
Yeah, my wife also works down at the pregnancy center here in Louisville, and it's my experience just in hearing what she's had to say that people are just longing for reasons to abort their children, some reason to justify it in their mind. So if we have these tests out there, is that all we're doing is just providing justification for these people to abort their children? Is that why we're there? Is that why those are there?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the big equations. By the way, that was Dave Hare, our guest here, whose sister Heather was born with Down syndrome. Gary, what do you make of all this?
Well, sometimes the tests are wrong, too. Grant, they actually did testing on Terry before Grant was born, because Terry was probably close to 35 when he was born, maybe not quite that old. Anyway, they did testing on him. There was never an indication there'd be anything wrong. So these tests can be wrong either way. But you know, to me, it's not so much about whether Grant is a blessing to my family or not. He was made in God's image, and it may not be the image that those of us have of the Almighty God, but you know. It doesn't matter. Grant was not a mistake. You know, something didn't break off. There was not, you know, God wasn't surprised by it. My son is exactly what God wanted him to be.
Gary, you're making an astounding claim there, and it's one I want to return to for a minute, because what you're really suggesting is that God's glory is in Grant being Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to argue that Grant is a gift not only to the Gupton family, but to the human family. Because we are better able to understand the glory and the goodness of God by seeing the joy and the innocence of Grant. And I don't want to miss that.
He has no preconceived notions about anyone. Grant does not prejudge anyone. He has enormous gifts and talents. What he would like to be right now, Dr. Mulder, when I was in the TV business, he wanted to be a sportscaster. Now he wants to be a minister that goes around praying for people in hospitals. And when I do hospital visits, I'll take Grant with me. And I'll tell you what, those folks get a lot bigger charge and feel more blessed when Grant prays for them than when I do. Because when this kid prays, there's no pretense that he's talking to somebody in the room. This kid is talking to God when he prays, and it's powerful.
That is really sweet. Let's go to Lois calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Lois, your turn.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Mueller. God bless you for your work. I just wanted to say that I worked in medical genetics for 17 years as a genetic counselor, and my take might be a little bit different than maybe a bunch of people, but I really think that the people who can most responsibly handle the results of prenatal testing and use it like a good parent are the Christians. They're not going to abort their baby when they find out their baby has Down syndrome, but they can use that information to say, whoa, let's look at my baby's heart before I deliver him or her. Maybe I should check out to see how my baby's swallowing mechanism is. And then, if their baby has some kind of a major malformation that's more common in babies with Down syndrome or any other genetic condition, they can deliver in a perinatal center. They can address the needs of their baby because of the information that they get before that baby is born and use it to have the healthiest baby possible.
Lois, we really needed that call. I mean, that adds another piece to the puzzle here. You know, the real scary thing is that the very information that Lois is suggesting Christians can use well in order to deliver a baby with a greater chance to thrive and survive, the same information is being used as others simply to decide to abort, just to start all over again. They don't want the baby. Now, Lois is reminding us that that Christians should be the ones who can handle that kind of information. And we're the people that have to walk into it saying, I don't care what I find out, this baby's going to go to term, and if the Lord allows it to be born, it's going to be received as God's gift. Folks, we got flooded with phone calls. I wish we could have taken them all. This is one of those stories, one of those issues, one of those questions that reaches immediately the human heart. You know, the big question is whether or not we're going to affirm the dignity of every single human being. If we don't see it in those with Down syndrome, someone else is not going to see it in us. I'll be right back. Dave Hare is a graduate student in theology here at Southern Seminary. He's the brother of Heather Hare, a 27-year-old sister who's now a college graduate working at Wendy's, and she has Down syndrome. You know, Dave, a lot of people would hear that and say, well, that must be just like a miracle. But actually, there are a lot of Down syndrome folks who live just this way, right?
Yeah, you know, we live in America where we have to give everyone a chance, but we forget about the Down syndrome, the handicapped people of our society. If we give these people a chance, if you live with them, if you talk to them, you'll see God in a way you've never seen him before. You'll see sports in a way you've never seen it before. You'll just see life in a different way, and it'll change you.
And in any event, they are made in the image of God, and they are our brothers and sisters.
Absolutely.
Gary and Terry Gupton are the parents of Grant, age 16. Mm-hmm. You know, Gary, it hardly seems to me it's possible that Grant's 16 years old.
It shocks us every now and then, too. One of the most remarkable things about Grant that what Dave was talking about athletically, Grant and I competed in the National Special Olympics golf tournament a couple of years ago. We lost 3 golf balls in the whole tournament. I lost them all. He didn't lose a one. He's the one that made me look bad.
Well, you know, Gary, I want to go back to when you and Terry, when you just started thinking about how you were going to raise Grant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look back over the last 16 years. What have you learned?
I've learned that that every child is different, but every child is valuable. How we handle Grant and Grace and Gray on disciplinary issues are all of them. You have to punch different buttons, but the same standard applies to them all. And Grant is probably the most loving, understanding, patient person that I've ever known. And you know, a lot of people, I would consider Grant our hero in our family for what he's overcome. He's had 20 surgeries. He never backs away from a challenge. He's just a tough kid. In fact, when he was a little kid, I called him Weed, because you can't kill a weed. And he's had a lot of chances to die, and God has brought him back every time. It's been remarkable.
But no weed has ever smiled at me or given me a hug like Grant has. Gary, Dave, thanks so much for coming in today. It really just adds a whole lot to this discussion to have someone who can speak with the kind of credibility. And not only that, I want to say this, the kind of affection that you've brought to this conversation. You are believers in Christ who not only know how to think about this issue, but also how to help others to think, speaking not only from the head but from the heart. Folks, this is where we as Christians have a distinctive witness. It's our responsibility to point to every single human being as made in the image of God and deserving of life. We have to come back and say, simply because they are human, they are made in God's image, and they deserve not only to live but to be treated with full respect, accorded all the dignity and respect, and given all the love that would come to any other human being. Folks, if we ever forget that, we have forgotten who we are, and we have turned our backs on our Creator. For it was He who created us and said, "It is good." I'll meet you tomorrow. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.